This is a Dreamcast disc and is for use only on a Dreamcast unit. Playing this disc on a hi-fi or other audio equipment can cause serious damage to its speakers.
Dreamcast, up to 6 billion players.
Welcome back to the stage of history.
Why don't we play together?
Hey, it's time to make some crazy money. Are you ready? Here we go!
Please stop this disc now.
Howdy do you do, fellow kids. My name is Tom. This is the Dreamcast Junkyard DreamPod, episode 70. I am joined by three amazing co-hosts. Today we have Mr. Mike Phelan. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Tom. So I had to unmute myself because your opening was quite strange. Hello, how are you, Tom?
I was just trying to get down with the kids. You know, I'm trying to get tapping back into that internet culture. You know, I've been out of it for so long. We're also joined by James. Hello, James. How are you doing?
Hello. I love how you've forgotten to speak on the internet now, Tom. It's like you've just forgotten how to communicate with people. It's brilliant.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I get all of my kind of memes and stuff from things that people send me on WhatsApp now. So I've aged about 30 years since I've not been on Twitter. And last but not least, Lewis. Hello, Lewis.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm good. How have you recovered yet from hosting the last DreamPod?
I was actually quite proud of that one, I will say. It was just unfortunate that my mic wasn't working properly, so it sounds really awful on that. Yeah. So other than that, it was a good shot.
Did you check that it was recording as many times as Tom just did, Lewis, when you did the last one?
There was a point where, in an attempt to listen back to a test recording, I muted everyone. And everyone was saying, who muted us? Why has my mic been muted? And I was like, oh, I didn't even realize that you have that power on Skype to just mute everybody.
To be fair to Tom, back in the day, I remember there was a podcast we did, and I think the entire podcast, Tom, from where we actually recorded it, it wasn't actually recorded at all.
Yeah, it makes that does ring a bell. I will say that does actually give me a really good way to segue into just a little bit of a plug for a new podcast that myself and James are both. James is the host. I'm just like one of his sort of minions. It's called the Series X Cast. It's all about the Xbox Series X, and it's available now, I believe. Is that right, James?
It is. We're still waiting for approval from iTunes, but it is available on Spotify and other various hosts, but yes, you can grab it now. Please do.
Yes, excellent. Right, let's crack on with talking about the Dreamcast. We've got a very I was going to say action packed, but packed podcast for you today. We're going to talk a little bit about some upcoming kickstarted projects, things that have already been released, and things that are on the horizon. We're going to talk about the new games that are heading our way for the Dreamcast. And then finally, we threw the doors open to our social media followers and asked for some questions. I believe Lewis is going to lead on that one, asking us some questions from Twitter and Facebook. So that will be interesting. Before we get on to the main topic, though, let's talk a little bit about some of the games we've been playing on the Dreamcast and on the other consoles that we own. Because we're all console agnostic here, I'm pretty confident in saying that. So we play things on different consoles. I'm going to start with you, Mike. What have you been playing on the Dreamcast? What have you been playing on your other consoles?
Yeah, so it's an unusual one for me this month because I haven't played Dreamcast much at all. So it's been mainly for me another console by Sega, Sega Saturn. I bought a Japanese Saturn last month, and I've gone head first into collecting. Playing on Saturn. So I've got about 50 games, some really good ones. Been playing mostly Dodonpachi, which I haven't played before. It's a really good game. And I've also been playing Dracula X or Castlevania Symphony of the Night, which was a game I wanted for quite a while. I know Saturn version is not as good as PS1 version, but it's one of those games I always want to try out. So I've been playing Saturn a lot in the last month.
Can I ask, did you pay a pretty penny for those games?
I paid a pretty penny for Castlevania, for Dracula X, indeed, yeah. It was expensive. The rest of them pretty good, actually. I did a good deal with Alan, who runs Alan's Retro Games, which is anyone who goes to conventions in the UK will know who Alan is. Mm-hmm. So he gave me a good deal with that. But I've just got a new job, so I sort of thought, I'd, yeah, let's splurge out on some Saturn stuff. My room is full of Dreamcast crap as enough as it is. I'm enjoying it, actually. It's been a while since I played Saturn. I played Saturn many years ago when I had a full sort of retro collection. I loved Saturn then, so I'm sort of playing some games I've played before and then also some games that I've not experienced before. So it's pretty good.
Yeah, I played Castlevania Symphony of the Night, as it's known on the PlayStation. I played it on the PlayStation 1 back in the day. Before it was... before everybody kind of started going mental about how expensive it is, I think I got it for like $7.99 from GameStation, the PS1 version, and it had the disc in the back, you know, the music disc. And when I finished it, I just kind of, it was just another game to get rid of.
Yeah.
Little did I know then that it'd be worth so much now.
I think it's I got so lucky in my Dreamcast collection. I didn't really spend much on most of my Dreamcast games. I don't mind spending a little bit more on a game which is sort of going to keep its value. Because the great thing with Saturn games is that they are going to keep their price, so it's definitely nothing. I'm not gonna buy all the really expensive ones. Is it Blast Wind, the one which goes for like £800 or something silly?
Okay. I have a confession. I've never played a Saturn game. I was very much PlayStation when I was a kid, when the two systems were out, and I actually bought a Saturn myself about 7 years ago now, and it's just been in my collection of tubs in the attic of retro stuff, and I've still never hooked it up.
You've never hooked it up? Wow.
Nope. I think it was dirt cheap. I think I paid like a tenner for it for a Saturn with Sega Rally and a couple of other like standard common games. But there are a handful of games that I really do want to play that I know I missed out on. But maybe one day I'll hook it up.
You can't really complain for £10, can you? So, Mike, anything else on the current systems?
Oh, a bit of a Switch. I haven't played the Xbox One and PS4 for quite a while, actually. But I've been playing Switch a lot. I've been playing a couple of downloadable games. Cuphead for the first time. I've never played Cuphead before. Oh, yeah. I'm really enjoying that. And Rush Rally 3, which is a one-man rally game, which was a phone game beforehand. I know you've played it as well, Tom, but... what an amazing achievement for a game. Fantastic. And as well as that, I'm playing a few other little bits. I'm playing Castlevania Collection. I was on sale on the Nintendo store. But yeah, that's pretty much it. I've been a Saturn and Switch player last month.
Yes, it's a nice combination of different consoles. I'm going to come to you next, Lewis. What have you been playing, Dreamcast or otherwise?
I picked up a Switch. I'm finally part of the Switch gang. It seems like everyone in the world except myself had a Switch. So on that, I got Pokemon Shield because I'm a big fan since I was a kid of that series. I'm absolutely loving that. I got Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. I just got Tokyo Mirage Sessions in the post that came out on Friday. And I've also got Katamari Damacy Reroll. And there's like so many games on this system. I'm just like scanning all these lists thinking, how on earth will I ever have enough money to buy all these games? I think you mentioned, Tom, when you first got a Switch, there wasn't really much on it.
Yeah.
But now there is. And yeah, it's quite an exciting console to own for that reason.
Oh yeah, there's just so much. The array of different games, like the different genres, is just to scroll through. There's like things will constantly pop up that I didn't even realize had been ported to the Switch. I was like... I was gonna play that on the PS4, but it's now on the Switch. So, should I get the Switch version?
As for like older systems, finally got and I'm kind of ashamed to admit that I never owned this up until now, but I got Daytona USA for the Saturn. Got that from, I think, is it Sore Thumbs in York?
Yes. Yeah.
Really nice retro gaming store. There's a few other things I wanted to get from there, but I just thought, you know, Christmas coming up at the time when I got it, I thought better not spend too much.
So did you actually go to the store in York, or did you get it on the internet? Yeah, I've heard the store is really like awesome because he does a lot of events like conventions and stuff, and he has so much stuff. It's Lee's name, isn't it, who runs it. He has so much stuff at these conventions, and apparently his store is just like a Aladdin's cave of like Japanese games and peripherals and all kinds of stuff.
I think I might have mentioned when we discussed it on a previous podcast, but there's some like, you know, PCFX and just random stuff. And I'm thinking, how did this find its way to York, you know, from Japan? you know, who imported this and how did it end up here? So yeah, so also on the Saturn, I picked up a game which I think functions less as a game and more of a comedy prop for my game shelf. And I tweeted it out. I'm not sure many people got the joke, but it was a Japanese game called Uno DX, which, and I'm talking Uno, the card game. It is an Uno game for the Saturn, which is also a visual novel, and it features a plot revolving around anime characters in a high school playing Uno. And I just,
of course it does.
I was looking through the manual, and there's like little profiles for each character, and I'm thinking, someone worked on this and nobody stopped them, and I bought it. Yeah, that's what I got.
Nobody stopped them.
Yeah. Other than that, I had a pretty good go at the Dreamcast this Christmas. I got some really good pickups, like two really big ones, ones that I've been kind of wanting for quite a while. One of them being Mackin X, which is a first-person hack-and-slash action game by Atlus, who I'm a big fan of. I love Shin Megami Tensei, I love Persona. So to see like the music of Shoji Meguro and Kazuma Kaneko's art on a Dreamcast game is pretty awesome for me. So I played that, and it's super stylish, and I quite like that.
Is that the PAL version or the NTSCJ version?
The PAL version, yeah. Okay. I got quite a good price on it, and I think it was from France, actually. It arrived really, really packaged heavily. I needed an axe to get into the box.
or a Mackin.
Yeah, exactly.
That one's been on my wish list recently, actually. But like you said, it's quite rare that they come up at a reasonable price, especially in good condition. So, be keen to hear what you think of it when you get further in.
Yeah, I'll let you know. The other one is a big one. Dynamite Cop. I got a really good deal on this as well. Unfortunately, when I received it, I realized and I looked at the listing afterwards, oh my god, like, did they trick me? No, there wasn't a manual in it, unfortunately. So if anyone out there wants to sell me a manual for Dynamite Cop, then, you know, hit me up.
I will have a look in my attic, because I do have a bag full of manuals and inlays for different games, PAL versions. So I'll have a look. I'm not promising I've got one, but I might have.
Well, if you can find one, that'd be awesome. Yeah, I love Die Hard Arcade on the Saturn, and the sequel is kind of like that gameplay up to a higher level. I just love it. The weapons you can pick up are amazing. Like, I never thought that I'd see a game where you can use a pepper shaker to stun it. Yeah.
Can you pick up like a giant frozen fish?
Yeah.
That's the one that sticks in my mind.
Yeah. But yeah, that's it for me. So yeah, those are like two really great pickups I got, so I'm pretty happy with that.
Brilliant collection. And what about yourself, James?
Dreamcast wise, I've not been playing a lot online recently, which is rare for me, because that's normally where I spend most of my Dreamcast time, just playing just playing things like Worms and just the general stuff with sort of PC Wizard and the community over there. But I did pick up two games sort of over Christmas, which as usual for me with my Dreamcast pickups were games that I always wanted to play when I was younger, had a Dreamcast and just never got around to playing them for whatever reason. One of them was Four Wheel Thunder, which started playing through and super enjoying it, but my god, it's hard. Looks fantastic, actually, even today. It's just got those kind of like sort of pseudo real graphics that are kind of like half cartoony and colorful and half kind of going for that realistic vibe. But it was kind of like, I think I had to sit down and play it for sort of 2 hours just to get my head in the groove before I started to see success, or, you know, without having to repeat the same race over and over again. Yep. And the interesting thing about it, actually, was just kind of like, it reminds you about how games were 20 years ago and beyond, where you've got nothing unlocked at the beginning until you actually start to win races or whatever it is in the game that you're doing. And as I said, with the difficulty levels so high, you've got almost nothing to play at the beginning until you actually force yourself to get good at it. So I've been enjoying that one, and that's one I'll definitely keep going back to, and because I'm keen to unlock quite a bit more and see what the other tracks are like. But first impressions of that one are really good. The other one, which I bought, which is kind of influenced by by my TV watching habits was South Park Rally, which isn't a great game. But it was one of those things where I was kind of randomly, about 6 months ago now, I was kind of like, oh, I really fancy watching South Park. And I've not watched it since it was kind of, since it first came out. And it just so happened to be around the same sort of weekend where they put all of South Park on Netflix and Amazon Prime. So I was kind of binge watching all the old ones, which then obviously got me all nostalgic. So went on eBay and I think it was like £6 or something. So I was like, oh, I'll get it. And yeah, I'm sure you've all played it. It's pretty dry. It looks lovely. I can imagine people buying this back in the day because screenshot wise and video, it looks great, but the gameplay is just terrible. So I don't know if I'm going to go back to that one and unlock much more.
There's tons to unlock though. The one good thing about South Park Rally is that when you think you've unlocked everything, there's more loads to unlock.
Yeah. Maybe I'll check it out again at some point, but, I imagine it would be more fun if I had four players just to play it local multiplayer with. But yeah, it's to be honest, most of my Dreamcast gameplay these days, as I said, if it's not an online game, I don't tend to invest an awful lot of time into it. Because as I said, most of my time is spent playing the good stuff online. Contemporary-wise, on the Switch, I finished Luigi's Mansion 3 off just after Christmas, which... Yeah. Was superb. It's a game I'll never go back to. I'll probably never play it again, but super, super enjoyed it. It's classic Nintendo, brilliant puzzles, you know, not too difficult, but enough to kind of make you think a little bit. Gameplay was great, although there were periods where the controls, because of the kind of weird, it's not isometric, but the weird kind of view they've got going on, and you can't control the camera. Sometimes the controls get really frustrating for some of the bosses. But I did really enjoy that game, and I'm glad we finished it. The other one on the Switch for me that I'm really enjoying is Astral Chain by Platinum.
Oh yeah, it came out to this big fanfare. I've not really heard anything about it since.
I would seriously recommend playing it. It's just the aesthetics on it, the environments, the landscape. It just looks gorgeous, and the gameplay is really nice. It takes a while again to sort of learn the combos and stuff, and understand how you should play the game, but. Yeah, it's if you're not worried about, you know, getting an S rank on every battle you have, it's quite easy to pick up and play, and sort of if you're just interested in the story side of things. So yeah, me and the wife have just kind of been sitting down playing through that one. And finally, this weekend actually, somebody gifted me a buddy pass for Stadia. Because as a huge Destiny player, as you know, Tom, I was keen just to at least see how it performed. So I've been with the Buddy Pass, you basically get 3 months of the pro membership, which includes Destiny 2. I've not played it away from my kind of my home setup yet. So been playing it obviously with, in browser, in Chrome, using a good wired connection, and it performs a lot better than I thought it was going to. It's not perfect, but I'm in London quite a bit in the next couple of weeks of work, so the big test is going to be how it performs over 4G or how it performs over internet, over hotel internet. So
yeah, that'd be interesting to hear actually. Quite intrigued again with Stadia after the big kind of initial sort of launch fanfare, and then all of the kind of negativity that came out afterwards. It's kind of gone a bit quiet.
Yeah.
So I'd be interested to hear your first-hand account of how it actually performs.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly, for the most part, not their target audience. I mean, I've got a gaming PC. I've got all the current-gen consoles. So there's nothing on Stadia, really, that appeals to me, other than the fact I can play Destiny 2, in theory, on my phone, which or on a... a Chromecast plugged into the TV when I'm traveling, which is a big deal because I genuinely do take my Xbox with me when I go and stay in hotels for work for a night or two at a time. So I can play Destiny 2 in my hotel on my own, like the loser that I am, instead of enjoying the London nightlife. So that's the case study for me. If that works, then just for Destiny 2, it's worth it for me.
Yeah, happy days. Cool. Well, we've covered quite a spectrum of different games and different consoles and different eras. I'll briefly just run through some of the things I've been playing. I was recently a guest on the Dreamcast Years podcast, we were talking about the year 2000 and some of the major games that came out for the Dreamcast in that year. And it just got me really nostalgic because I hadn't played on the Dreamcast for probably about 6 months prior to that. And we were chatting about Crazy Taxi. And I was like, you know what? I really want to play Crazy Taxi. So I got Crazy Taxi out, played through that for about an hour or so, and then I was looking through the bag of games that I had sort of next to me and just pulled out random games one after the other and just started playing through them. I had played Marvel vs. Capcom for a while, just completely forgot how good that was. Sternwind, again, I did an article on the Dreamcast Junkyard a few months ago about the Sternwind release for the Nintendo Switch, and that was on my shelf still, so I had a quick blast on that. And really randomly, in that bag of games that I had, there was the entire collection of Dreamcast Express demo discs. And because the Dreamcast I was using is a multi-region one, I just thought, I'll put one of these in, see what's on there, and just have a bit of a mess around. And for some reason, my eyes were drawn to Napple Tail, the demo version, which is on the Dreamcast Express demo disc. And so I played through that for a bit for some reason. I had no idea what I was doing. No idea of the story or anything, but it was quite quite enjoyable, quite whimsical, shall we say.
That's translated now, isn't it?
Last month, yeah.
Yes, I believe it is, but I was playing the demo version, so nothing as extravagant as a English translation for me. I like to do things the hard way. When it comes to current gen, I've been playing a lot, as you guys have, on the Switch. Mike, you mentioned a game I've been playing quite a lot. It's Rush Rally 3, as you mentioned again, developed by one guy on his own. And for that, it's just a phenomenal achievement. It's actually better than WRC8 and V Rally 4 on the Switch. Mm-hmm. So it's easily the best rally game on the Switch. Yes, it's an Android port, but still, it's a great achievement. Well worth a look. That's Rush Rally 3. Other games I've been playing are Doom 2. I'm obsessed with Doom. It's probably one of my favourite games. Been playing Doom 2 on the Switch. Since they released the update a couple of weeks ago with all the new downloadable content, you've got things like the Mega Wads, such as No Rest for the Living, which I've been playing through. You've got Final Doom added as well. 60 frames a second update. It's just the most amazing way to play Doom.
Final Doom is the most nostalgic one to me. That was the one that I had it for Christmas with my PlayStation 1, and it was like I was at that age where it was still a bit naughty to be playing Doom, if you know what I mean. It's still a bit like, so yeah, that's the one that ticks all the boxes for me.
It's weird playing Doom for me because I remember when I first played it, it was the Atari Jaguar version, because that's the first console I owned that could play Doom. And because of the cartridge size and the limitations of that particular port of Doom, there's loads of stuff that was cut, so like some of the levels are smaller, a lot of the places there are like different textures, so playing back through like the original Doom on the Switch, because I've got Doom 1 as well, seeing all the original sort of PC textures on some of the walls and the different places that you couldn't go in the Jaguar version because it just didn't exist, it's just like, it's almost like a new game. You know what I mean? So it's just, it's brilliant. I love Doom.
Tom, how do I get Final Doom on Switch then? Do I just buy the Doom 1 and 2 and then you get...
If you buy either Doom 1 or Doom 2, I'm guessing it'll be the most up-to-date version because it will have pushed the update to the version on the eShop. And then you can just go into the add-ons section, download Final Doom. You get TNT and Evolution and Plutonia. Plus the, I think with Doom 1 you get Sigil, the new John Romero release. And as I said, the aforementioned No Rest for the Living with Doom 2.
It's worth looking out for the is it Doom Slayer Collection, the physical release of Doom 1, Doom 2 and Doom 3 on Switch. I think they're downloads for 1 and 2 anyway, as a actual disc, but there's a pack out now, which I think came out last week, I think. I'm not sure how much it is, but obviously it'll have all of the access to Doom 1, Doom 2 and Doom 3, which is a underrated Doom game, really.
Brilliant, yeah. I've got Doom 3 as well on the Switch. Fantastic, fantastic port. And of course, in the coming weeks, we've got Doom 64 to look forward to as well, so that's worth looking at. And other than that, just playing the usual stuff like WRC 8, Dirt 2, fired up the PS2 today. I know it's sacrilege to talk about a PS2 game on a Dreamcast podcast. But I've been playing WRC Rally Evolved, which is an unbelievably good rally game for the time. So much stuff in there that you just don't get in modern rally games. Like when you start a stage, the camera is like inside the car, and as you're like driving towards the start line, you've got all the crowd kind of like parting out of the way, you know, and just like people stood there drinking cups of tea and stuff. And it's just brilliant the way they had the foresight to do that back in the day. And you still don't get that kind of level of detail in modern rally games. So, yeah, it's well worth checking out if you've got a PS2 knocking about. Right, let's knock that on the head now. We've spoken a little bit about what we've been playing. Let's talk about some new things coming our way for the Dreamcast community. So I'm going to jump headfirst into the first topic of discussion, and that is new Kickstarter projects or things that have already been delivered. And yeah, there's a couple coming up this year in 2020. The first one on the horizon, I believe, is the new book, Dreamcast Year One. Full disclosure, I was interviewed for this book, and I also helped do a little bit of proofreading and some fact-checking. So it's a look at the Dreamcast launch from a distinctly British angle. So it's all about what the launch was like for us on this fair isle. And yeah, as I say, I was involved. Andrew, the guy who runs it and runs the Dreamcast Years podcast, came to me because of obviously my involvement with the Dreamcast Junkyard, and just wanted to get a kind of a perspective from a fan, really, and somebody who was, you know, was there quite early on when the Dreamcast launched, and then went on to create this kind of community that we're all a part of now. And it was, yeah, I felt quite honoured, really, to be asked. Guys, are you aware of this, and did you back it for, you know, primarily? James?
Yep, I backed it. I'll generally back anything literature-wise if Dreamcast stuff is included. And obviously it's one I've been following the podcast for as well, which have been sort of coming out. So so yeah, super looking forward to this one. The various sort of samples I've seen look fantastic.
Mike, did you back this book?
I did. Yeah, yeah. I've got I've got two copies coming my way when it's released. Looking forward to it. Obviously, Andrew's been on the podcast a few times now, so really good to hear from him. He's a nice guy, and hope it does really well. It looks really, really good. It looks he's put some posts up on his Twitter feed today, and it looks like a solid book.
Yeah. What about you, Lewis? Have you seen this at all?
So I didn't originally back it, but obviously having the pleasure of knowing Andrew through you know, being a part of the community, and he's been on two episodes of the podcast now, including the one that we mainly focused around Dreamcast Year One. He's obviously just reached out to me and said, you know, do you want to get one as well? So I put the money down on I think it was Wednesday. Yeah. So even though I didn't kickstart it, I've managed to get my name in the book, which is an honor, really, because it looks like you guys say, it looks really good. The artwork in it looks particularly awesome. He did show us a few pieces of that quite a while ago now when we did the original podcast with him. So yeah, it's really cool to see, you know, where it started in the previews and obviously now what it's become.
Yeah, it'd be really interesting to get it out. I really want to get it in my hand and actually have a look at it, not least because, you know, I was involved in it and I was interviewed for my own kind of thoughts and memories. But he's also got some really cool interviewees. So you've got people like Ed Lomas, who was the editor of the official Dreamcast magazine, and the guy who also did the artwork for the failed Future. I say failed, the one that was pitched to Sega from Future Publishing to be the official Dreamcast magazine. And he's got some never before seen like proofs of their pitch to Sega, which is really cool. It's got an interview with Bernie Stolar in there. So yeah, it's very much a look at the first year of the Dreamcast in the UK, and it follows in the footsteps quite similarly to the PlayStation Vita Year One and Year Two books, which I also backed on Kickstarter because obviously I'm a big fan of the Vita. So yeah, I can vouch for the quality of those books having backed them, and Andrew was also involved in those as well. So if it's anything like either of those two, it'll be a really cool addition to any Dreamcast collection. Going to talk a little bit about the book, the Dreamcast Collected Works from ROM. ROM have had a couple of other books in the past. They did one about the Genesis Mega Drive, which is really highly sort of thought of in the retro gaming world. I've seen it, I've read through it, it's really high quality. For me, this is no different. Again, full disclosure, I backed this book. I reviewed it on the Dreamcast Junkyard. I thought it was fantastic. And it kind of, the way that they got almost unbridled and unrestricted access to a lot of the prototype designs of the Dreamcast and things that had never been seen before is really cool. I don't know, I feel like I'm gushing slightly. I know that some of the other guys on the podcast have got different opinions of this book. James, I'm going to come to you. What are your thoughts on Dreamcast Collected Works?
I think, you know, the book is beautifully made. There's no doubt about that. And maybe it's just not the right book for me. I think when I read a book on something like a retro console, you know, I'm reading it because I want to, you know, literally have all the nostalgia of seeing all the box art, the PAL stuff that I saw back in the late 90s and things I read about in magazines and just to sort of relive that experience, I guess, in a way. And, you know, obviously this book, the Collected Works, is very much not that. It's, as you said, there's a lot of very high resolution images in there. It's very much a coffee table book, but I think Mike mentioned this before we came on the show. It kind of doesn't really have enough imagery. There's, you know, there's a lot of text in there as well, which kind of stops it from being that pickup coffee table book. So, as I said, I take nothing away from the book, but my personal opinion is it just didn't do anything for me. I found it, you know, I did start flicking through and started reading some of the articles in there, some of the interview quotes and stuff at the beginning. But when I started flicking through a lot of the concept art, yes, it was lovely to see a lot of it, you know, uninterrupted with no backgrounds on a plain white page. And as I said, a very high resolution. But a lot of those images, the Sonic images, the Shenmue images, all the different stuff in the back, a lot of it is stuff that you've seen before. And really, for me, taking it out of context, taking it away from all of the loud 90s and early 2000s styling that goes on around it, just kind of ruined it for me a little bit. And that's just my opinion on it.
No, totally valid. Everyone's entitled to an opinion. What about you guys? What about you, Mike?
I think I'll echo what James says, really. I like the book. I do like the book. It's a nice, solid coffee table book. But it felt a bit clinical to me. It felt a little bit soulless, maybe. Mm-hmm. It's not because I don't like the type of book. I'm personally not really one for picture books. I'm not really one for long history books either, as you know, I wanted a book that the kind of book I want, I've already done myself. So I don't really I like an encyclopedia approach. So it's always going to be a little bit less than that for me. But I think it's a really good book in terms of what it looks nice, it looks good quality, but it just felt a little bit clinical and it felt a little bit like nothing was really new to me, which was a bit disappointing because I would have hoped there would have been some better stuff in there. But it's a good quality book. I think we all knew what we were getting in for, I think. I don't think we expected it to be maybe the be-all and end-all Dreamcast books. I think that's still to come. And that's quite an exciting prospect that one day there still will be a better book to come.
Okay, that's valid points. What about you, Lewis?
I'm kind of the odd one out here. I've not read this book at all. From your article, Tom, I did really like the look of it. But you know, I've not actually got a copy myself, so maybe I will invest in it at some point. But seeing as the team here is split, I don't know which way to go, guys.
That's fair enough. One of the most striking things about the book for me was the mix of like the Dreamcast console and the controllers, the actual official drawings that were used. I'd never seen that before. And I don't think they were actually released. I don't think they're actually in the public domain.
You're on about the technical drawings with all the sizes and stuff. Is that the ones you're on about?
That's right. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I have never seen, and I don't know how prevalent this might be with other consoles, but I have never, ever seen an image of Dreamcasts being produced like a production line or inside a factory. I mean, you could say that about any console. I mean, who goes around snapping photographs inside a PlayStation factory or whatnot? But... Mm-hmm. You'd think that there must be someone somewhere who took a picture of like inside of one of these factories, but that's probably the closest we're ever going to get to seeing that. You know, it's the very sort of the basic designs that this whole thing that we're talking about now that brought us all together is based on. So for me, that is you know, that's probably about as close as we're going to get to seeing the very things being created. Mm-hmm. Let's move on from books and paper-based kickstarted items. Let's move on to one that's created solely with plastic and the tears of children. No, it's the Striker DC from Retro Fighters. I know a couple of people here have backed it. I know you have, Mike.
Yeah.
For those people who don't know what this is, it's a new controller for the Dreamcast, which is very much in the mold of the N64 one that's got the analog stick, and it's basically looks like a PS2 controller or a PS4 controller with two prongs, and adds for the Dreamcast at least an extra trigger on each side, as well as the analog triggers. It's got an extra digital trigger. Is it for fighting games, Mike? Is that what the whole point is?
I think so. I think that's the concept behind it. But right. It's a bit of an odd choice because obviously they've only got four face buttons, which I think a lot of people in the community are a little bit confused by. Where would you make a fighter pad and then only have four buttons?
Because I mean the ASCII pad for the Dreamcast is what you would consider the ultimate fighting game controller. Yeah. So why not use that as a basis? I don't know.
I didn't assume it was a fighting pad. It was pitched on Kickstarter as just next-gen Dreamcast controller. I just assumed it was just, you know, not a better DC pad. We don't know yet, but a more modern take on it. I didn't assume it was just for fighting games.
Yeah, I mean, I've never held one of these controllers. I've seen them. I've seen them reviewed on other websites. I've seen video reviews, and they look to be pretty high quality. I personally haven't bought one. I haven't Kickstarted it. The price for me is a bit of a stumbling block. $49, which is about £40 roughly, plus shipping. It just seems a little bit excessive because I do have an abundance of Dreamcast controllers, none of which I have an issue with. So it just seems like a bit of a frivolous purchase for me.
I think it is. It's sort of one of those things where Dreamcast fans are going to buy, and people who really can't get on with Dreamcast controller, which let's face it, it's not the most well-made controller in the world. As it does feel a little bit cramped even for me. It doesn't feel the most comfortable. I don't think it's necessarily to replace a controller though. I think it's just an extra sort of controller to have, or for people who really have problems with the controller as it is. I mean, it is expensive. I mean, it's the same sort of price as a modern generation console, which it hasn't got the features of that. It hasn't got the bits inside it that the modern ones do. So it is slightly high priced.
Mm. It's weird though as well, because I remember earlier this week when I was playing on the Dreamcast Crazy Taxi, I was using the Dreamcast controller, and the amount of times my thumb went to look for a second analog stick, because I'm so now used to playing games with two analog sticks, and then realizing there was nothing there. It was actually really weird, just like the concept of like not having the second analog stick. Obviously, games would need to have been made with that in mind, so there's probably no point even building a Dreamcast controller with a second analog stick.
But I think Quake would work, wouldn't it? Quake and analog.
Possibly, yeah.
Because obviously, because you can do one of the control maps is for the buttons to be movement and the other one to be fire, isn't it, all the other way around?
I'm the same
as you guys, really. You know, for me personally, I know it's the rose-tinted specs, but you know, the Dreamcast is my favorite console because I had it when it was contemporary. It was the sort of the first console that I sort of pre-ordered and waited in line for. Therefore, I have a lot of nostalgia to the hardware, and when I play on a Dreamcast, a big part of that for me is using, you know. Well, it's using my original Dreamcast that was from launch day, and using the real controller in my hands. I was also very fortunate, again, about 10, 12 years ago, had a load of mates coming around, and we were going to do a bit of a retro night. So I went on eBay at the time. I think I bought like four brand new Dreamcast controllers for like 10 quid or something. So I've literally got brand new Dreamcast controllers that I still haven't used yet. And I personally really like the controller. I find it really comfortable. I've got quite big hands, so it fits really nicely for me. I've got absolutely zero interest in this. You know, it's, as you said, it's something that I think if you use the Dreamcast every single day to play games, you know, as you would use an Xbox One or something, then maybe it would be worth doing it for that. But for someone like me who plays Dreamcast a couple of days a week, The original controller is a big part of the experience, in my opinion.
I think that the Dreamcast controller, the original, is fairly harmless as far as usability. I think, you know, something like the Nintendo 64, you know, them making one probably to even to replace it to some extent. Now there's a new version of the Nintendo 64 controller that's not stupid. Then I can use that as a replacement, and that's what I use now. I don't use the original anymore. Whereas the DC controller is, you know, if anything, like a lot of people say that the Xbox controller was inspired by it.
And yeah.
It then goes on to have, you know, newer controllers that we have on modern systems. So it was kind of like the bridge between old controllers and new controllers, really. And it does a good job. I did kickstart this because I wanted to sort of see how it would be, but I don't think it'll be, you know, a replacement at all. It's probably like for the friend who judges the normal Dreamcast controller. But then again, that might still be an expensive fee for impressing them.
I thought you were going to say it's like the friend who comes over, like back in the day when you give them the Mad Catz controller.
Yeah. I'm the only one who seems to not like the Dreamcast controller, which is slightly ironic. I like Lewis said. The controller clearly is sort of the second step in the current Xbox controller revolution after the Sega Saturn 3D pad and the Xbox pad, and obviously 360 and Xbox One. I really can't stand DualShock. I've never have liked Sony PlayStation controller. I've never been able to get on with it properly. I've always preferred the Xbox. So the Dreamcast is okay, but I've never felt 100% comfortable with the controller. It's always felt to me a little bit, I'm not sure. It's just, I've never felt like it's really fits me properly. I've got big hands as well, so it's a good size, but it's never been right for me.
Well, here's hoping that Retro Fighters come up with an Atari Jaguar controller next. with an extra large keypad in the middle.
Yes. How would you improve on perfection, though, Tom?
Well, this is it, you know. You've got to leave it to
the expert. Isn't the thing about the Jaguar pad that it's not as bad as, like, the clickbait lists on the internet say it is?
It's actually really comfortable, but this isn't the time or the place to discuss these kind of Jaguar controls.
This is the Jaguar junkyard now.
I could speak for hours about the Jaguar, but I will not bore you all to death. We've been talking about the Striker DC, which is the new controller from Retro Fighters. Find out more, retrofighters.com. We've been speaking about Dreamcast Year One, which you can find out more about at dreamcastyears.co.uk. And finally, Dreamcast Collected Works, which you can find out more about and buy at readonlymemory.vg, which is a bit of a weird one. URL. Right, let's move on. We're going to talk about more Kickstarters, unfortunately, or fortunately, whichever way you look at it. This time, though, we're going to be talking about games. There's four or five games coming our way confirmed for the Dreamcast in 2020, which is pretty cool considering the console is 20 year old. The console that has got such a, you know, huge community of indie and homebrew developers still creating games with such regularity, you know, as the Dreamcast. It's quite amazing, really, when you think about it. It's probably something to do with how easy it is to develop games for, but I'm not a developer, so don't quote me on that. Let's have a little look at the list of games we've got confirmed for this year. Well, four of them are confirmed. One of them is slightly iffy, but we'll get to that in a second. So the list is Xenocrisis, Intrepid Izzy, Xenocider, and Arcade Racing Legends. And then the one that's a bit is Slave, which has been... Well, it's been coming out for about the last 5 years. Still haven't seen anything of it other than the odd email update for those who have backed it or pre-ordered it. But yeah, let's just kind of go down this list and talk a little bit about each one in turn. So let's start with Xenocrisis from Bitmap Bureau. This one actually came out in, I think it was September last year, for the Switch and the PS4 and the Xbox One and the PC and Neo Geo as well, and the Mega Drive, I believe. It's coming to the Dreamcast next, sometime in the next couple of months, I'm assured. For those people who don't know what this is, it's almost like a sort of a top-down, is it like a sort of Smash TV style thing?
Yeah.
I've never played Smash TV, so I use that reference, but I'm not sure if it's correct. Help me out.
Smash TV, Chaos Engine, sort of top-down multi-directional shooter.
Yeah, that sounds about right to me. So it's a twin, almost like a twin stick shooter. You play as one of two Marines, a male or a female. It borrows heavily, for me at least, from sort of like the Aliens franchise, the art style. It's very kind of comic book-esque, single room. You exit a room, you move to the next one, the aliens all come in, you've got to kill them all, and then you move on to the next room. It's really cool on the Switch. It's almost like the Switch was built for this kind of thing, this like single room multi-directional shooter. The one thing that kind of worries me slightly about the Dreamcast version is the fact that the Dreamcast, again, doesn't have two analog sticks, because on the Switch and on the PS4, I would imagine, and on the Xbox One, it makes heavy use of the multi-directional and being able to move at the same time. So because the Dreamcast hasn't got that functionality, I'm not really sure how it's going to work unless you can use the face like buttons.
To shoot, I reckon.
Yeah. Like Quake. I think I'm getting ahead of myself, though. Has anybody else here played this game?
No.
Deathly silence. So just me.
Even though I am in it, apparently. There's those who backed it. Our names are in it, aren't we? So Woss, one of our fellow junkyarders, has put a picture up of him killing me, I believe, because he didn't see me. As one of the hostages, which is nice of him.
That's cool. I've not seen myself yet. I think basically what the premise is when you go into certain rooms, you get these like hostages that are bound, and when you rescue them, the name, like it's, I think it's like a randomly generated name of somebody who backed the game, pops up showing you who it is. I've not seen myself yet. I did back this again, full disclosure, but I was mainly looking for the Dreamcast version. So hopefully when that comes in the near future, we can have a look at that. I did actually go and see the developers because I know the lead programmer. I was the one who gave him the twin stick controller for the Dreamcast to add that functionality to the Dreamcast version. Yep. So those people who've got a twin stick can play it with the twin stick.
There you go. All three of you.
I'm sure that is coming out in early 2020. There's no actual specific date yet. But
of course, the weird thing with Xenogears Crisis, it's the first indie game which is being made by people who actually did make Dreamcast games back in the day.
Indeed, yes. Do you want to tell us about that, Mike?
So lead designer, I think possibly some of the other team as well, but I'm not entirely sure, worked on Giant Killers, the Football Manager game, back in 2001, I think it was. And they're also going to make another game as well, whose name escapes me, but the sheep herd in. So they've actually worked on Dreamcast back in the day, basically. So it's a first time, I think. I'm trying to rack my brain to see whether indie games were made by people who made games at a time, but I think it's going to be the first one.
There's a guy called Elton Bird, I believe, who used to work for Sega Europe. He created a homebrew version of Tempest 2000 for the Dreamcast. Oh, cool. He's never released it. I believe he's looking at a disc somewhere, but I think he might also qualify for that kind of accolade. Cool. But as we've never seen the game in public, Okay, let's move on to the next one. Next, we have Arcade Racing Legends, which is the second fully 3D racing game for the Dreamcast from an independent developer after 4x4 Jam, which came out in 2016,
I think. Yeah.
Yes, which was a port of a PSP game. Was it PSP Mini?
PSP Mini, yeah.
Yeah. This game, again, kickstarted. Did you back it, Mike?
I did, yeah.
Yeah. Did anybody else?
I did, yes. Go on, Lewis.
I was just saying I didn't.
When I first heard about this, I was like straight away, oh, this looks great, I'm going to back it. And then I found out it was a port of a mobile game.
Is it?
And I was a bit like, I'm not so sure anymore.
I didn't know that. I didn't know it was a port of a mobile game.
I think they clarified something to do with that. Yeah.
Well, if you'd read my article. No, so it's based loosely on the engine from a mobile game. But it's been upgraded significantly. There's nothing, none of the content from that game in this version.
Right, so it's just the engine they're using, yeah.
It is, yeah. So I've played. I think I've played the version they released, the last beta version they released. I'm not quite sure. They sent me one for when I did the article for the Junkyard, and it runs actually really well. It's I was very similar to what James just said. I actually said on Twitter, I think I actually asked them if it was a port of a mobile phone game, and they clarified, sent me the beta at the time, and it's not MSR quality. but it's better than I think most people are going to expect. It runs really well.
For people who are listening who don't really know what we're talking about, this is Arcade Racing Legends. It's from Pixel Heart. It's a 3D racing game, and it purports to kind of draw on the arcade heritage of Sega. So you've got different vehicles from different Sega games. They're not obviously licensed. They're kind of like imitations. So you've got things like Scud Race, Crazy Taxi, the Sega Rally Cars, the Daytona Hornet, I believe, is in there as well. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like an homage, really, to Sega racing games of the past, which I am actually surprised Sega haven't done themselves, because it seems like such a really cool concept. Yeah. You know.
It does. As I said, I went back to it in the end, and I did actually kickstart it because, you know, again, you get in the original, the PAL, the PAL packaging and everything which it comes with. And as Mike said, from the early release, looked really good, and the screenshots they've shown, and there's been so many additional cars they've been unveiling kind of once every month or something up towards the end of last year. So there is a ton, or there seems to be a ton of content in there. So I'm kind of looking forward to it now. I think it was obviously supposed to come out just before Christmas, but they delayed it. They've currently said Q1 this year. So who knows? I don't think it'll make Q1, but we'll wait and see. The only thing I was super gutted about, and I was really hoping it would happen, was the one they did have one of the last stretch goals they had on the Kickstarter was to implement an online mode.
Yeah.
And that would have been awesome. You know, again, as someone who's particularly active in the online community, online gaming space, you know, the guys, you know, Shu especially, have brought sort of like 30 odd games back online now, and we're getting to the point where there's not a lot of games now that aren't back online. So obviously having brand new games to play online would be phenomenal. But yeah, anyway, didn't get that far, unfortunately, but still looking forward to it nonetheless.
Yeah, likewise, I'd be very keen to see if one of you guys wants to review it for the Dreamcast Junkyard. I'd be very interested to see what you think of it. Moving on, the next one on the list, we have Intrepid Izzy. This is a game from Senile Team, the same guys who did Rush Rush Rally Racing and created the Beats of Rage engine. Yep. So the pedigree is there. They've got the chops to do a really decent indie game. And Intrepid Izzy looks, for all intents and purposes, like a continuation of that, to be honest. Really nice art style. It's very colourful. It's a 2D platformer with sort of light beat-em-up elements involved, because you can create like combos to unleash like fireballs and like special kicks and things like that against enemies. If we can collect different costumes to get, you know, into different stages that you need these costumes for, so like a scuba diving costume to get underwater, that kind of thing. I played a preview version of this and I was quite impressed. I do remember it having really good music as well. So going off previous games from Senile Team, I'd be very surprised if this isn't every bit as good as it looks. It's also come out on the PS4, I believe, and also on PC. But it's not like the Dreamcast version is like a tacked-on afterthought. It was always going to be a Dreamcast game alongside the PS4 and the Steam versions. So, yeah, it looks pretty cool. Guys, what are your thoughts? Mike?
Yeah, it's looking really good. I think of all of the games, it's probably the one which is going to hold most appeal. That's the wrong word. But it's the game which I think has got the biggest pedigree. It's, you know, the other developers are great. I'm sure they're going to deliver. But Senile Team have delivered some of the best indie games for Dreamcast.
They know the Dreamcast inside out.
Exactly, yeah.
The past games they've released. So
exactly. I know Beats of Rage, obviously, Beats of Rage wasn't a released game, as it were. It's been a mod. Happy game, but how many people have got collections of Beats of Rage mods? So I was going to say,
try selling that to people on Etsy, who sell Beats of Rage collections for like 20 quid a pop.
No, it looks really good. It actually looks like a refreshing game as well. I think it's, you know, it's not too long ago. I think on maybe the first few episodes of this podcast, we were talking about every indie game was a shooter, every game was a shmup. Actually, we haven't got any shooters coming out, really. It seems to all be, as in traditional vertical or horizontal shooters. Yeah. These platformers are coming out now, racing games. It's really good to see a real breadth of genre on the indie horizon.
Yeah. James, what about you? Have you had a look at this one?
Yeah, not my cup of tea, to be honest. 2D stuff, I'm not really a big fan of the super clean, super smooth 2D visuals. If it's going to be 2D, I like it to be more in the kind of, in the style of sort of Xenocrisis, so more kind of pixelated, even if it's not kind of, you know, 8-bit pixelated, but I kind of like those visuals. So the whole really super smooth 2D HD kind of graphics don't really do an awful lot for me, I'm afraid. So I passed on this one.
I do see what you're saying. It almost kind of has a feel of like almost like a flash game if it's too clean.
Yeah,
that's just my opinion. But yeah,
like Dutch.
Yeah.
Sort of good, because of its image, it looks less appealing than a pixelated shooter, even though it probably looked actually better.
Mm. Yeah, it looks like a browser game almost, like kind of just like throwaway. But that's not not to say that Intrepid Izzy is not going to be a fantastic 2D platformer. Lewis, what about you?
I think it looks interesting. I kind of agree with what you say about it sort of looking like a flash game. Obviously, you know, there are good flash games. You know, I'm sure it's a really good game. The RPG platformer kind of element are really interesting to me. It kind of reminds me of a Working Designs Sega CD game called Pop for Mail. Reminds me of that. But yeah, it looks interesting. As long as it's not too expensive, I'll pick it up and give it a go. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, nice reference there to Popful Mail as well.
The
next one, which is guaranteed coming out this year, is Xenocider. I can never work out how I'm meant to pronounce that. This one comes from our friends over at Retro Summers over in Spain. This one has been in development for about 3 years now, I think. And is basically an homage to things like, I think Sin and Punishment is the best thing to liken it to. I know that we liken it to Space Harrier, but it's a polygonal kind of into the screen shooter where you can fly around and run along the ground as well. There is actually a stage in there that is an homage to Space Harrier. This was, I think the Kickstarter failed, but then they went to like sort of a crowdfunding platform to get it off the ground. And it's moving along quite nicely. What I do like about this one is the fact that they've created an entire world, almost like an entire mythos out of nothing for this character, the world, the music. Even there's like a comic book artist who's created all this bespoke art for the game. This is the kind of effort that would go into, you know, an indie game on a current platform, let alone a Dreamcast game. I think that this is it's a step above what you would normally expect from an indie game on the Dreamcast. It looks great. I really hope it is successful and it gets the recognition it deserves, because I know these guys, they do this part-time. It's not a full-time job for them. I don't know about the other games that we've spoken about, but I know for a fact that these guys do this in their spare time. And the fact that they've come up with something so amazing looking is just a testament really to the effort they've put in. So, this one comes out, I believe, no later than the middle of this year. So,
yeah. This one looks great. It's just to echo what Mike said, it's another example. I know it's a shooter, but it's another example of a bit of variety. You know, getting these 3D games on indie games on Dreamcast now is just great to see. I must admit, this one kind of passed me by until I read your article, Tom, and it was one that I kind of looked into straight away. It's a bit of a shame that the PAL boxed version was like €100 or something, but the I think the normal kind of jewel case version is 45, so that's manageable. I also note that they've it supports the twin stick as well, so if they didn't use yours to test it, Tom, I don't know who the hell else has got one that supplier.
Well, are you, Mike, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's actually the one game I haven't actually got pre-ordered at the current time. I did back it on Kickstarter, but I'm sort of waiting, because every time I go and sort of to buy it from their site, I notice a different version or something different about it. So I'm going to wait as late as I can to pre-order my copy. So it looks great. Yeah, I think it's the Planet Harriers game that we were meant to get on Dreamcast that we never did. So.
Oh, yeah, good reference. Yeah. I remember seeing I think on one of them demo discs, them Dreamcast Express demo discs, there's a like an upcoming preview of new games, and Planet Harriers is one of them.
Yeah, I think on number, watching seven, it, number I thinking, seven, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, oh man, imagine that came out on the Dreamcast. That'd have been cool. Yeah. Lewis, sorry, I feel like I'm kind of like coming to you last every time, and I'm not doing it consciously. It's just the way it's worked out. But what are your thoughts on Xenosider?
Not to discredit any of the amazing 2D games we've received from the community, but it is cool to see something like this that is in 3D, you know, because a lot of our favorite games on the Dreamcast are 3D, so it's good to see that the community are really stepping it up and moving to the 3D plane, you know. And it's incredible that the Dreamcast community hasn't laid dormant at all. You know, we had a lot of good homebrew games, and it seems like they just keep going up and up. You know, it seems like people are finding new ways to breathe life into this, what is supposedly a dead system, like two decades later. So, yeah, this is really a good sort of indication of where we are with the Dreamcast in 2020, I think.
So we've spoken about the ones that are virtually guaranteed to come out. Let's talk a little bit about the one that has been lingering around for a while now. This is J. Townsend Slave from Goat Store Publishing. This one is, it looks really cool. It's a sort of a puzzle game come first person shooter. Don't really know too much about what all the gameplay elements are going to be in there, but it's been around for a while now. It kind of has a sort of a Tron like vibe to it, you know, the visuals. Yeah. You move around in this 3D space collecting things, I suppose, getting to the end of the level. We don't really know what the gameplay is going to be like. But yeah, every now and then people who have backed it or pre-ordered it get an email from Goat Store saying, we're still working on it. There's some bugs that we're squashing. And it just kind of, you know, goes on and on and on. But yeah, I mean, I'm hoping it'll be released this year, if only for the sanity of the people working on it, because I can imagine, you know, when you've got something that you need to do at work and you just keep putting it off and it's just like starts hanging around in the back of your mind. Is it worth me asking your thoughts on this one, guys? I mean, I think we've spoken about it in the past. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, we've spoken about it in the past. I think I'm still waiting for my limited edition version to come. It's the 15th anniversary it was coming out for, so it's 5 years now.
Wow.
It looks really good, and the game looks really good. For some reason, in my head, I'm sort of looking at it as being a sort of almost like a 3D version of a game like Xenocrisis. Mm. That's how in my head it's pictured, sort of like a twin stick shooter, but in 3D. I know it's not a twin stick shooter, but it looks really, really cool. I hope they do make it. But and, you know, every single email's been the same. You know, we're squashing bugs. I mean, it's one hell of a bug.
yeah, might as well call in the Starship Troopers to crush that bug.
Yeah.
I'm quite proud of that, actually. I just came up with that. Lewis, a break with tradition. What do you think?
I think that it looks really cool. It's one that I think probably because I've sort of come into the community, you know, maybe in the last few years. So I think I probably, when was it initially pitched?
2015.
Yeah, so yeah. I probably missed that one because I was not being in the community and just sort of like being on the sort of the edge. I was missing a lot of these really cool Kickstarters. So, yeah, it looks cool. I think maybe it's – I feel relieved that maybe I'll wait until it's out. I do really like the sort of aesthetics of the way it looks. But, yeah.
And what about you, James?
Yeah, I mean, it looks cool. At least there's light at the end of the tunnel on this one, unlike Elysian Shadows, or however you pronounce it, which is $60 I'm never going to see again because it's in his pocket and he's since done a runner. But anyway.
Well, I have it on good authority that it's still coming, Elysian Shadows, that is. So just hold on. I'm not saying anymore. I'm not incriminating anybody or myself.
I'll pay James $60 if it comes out for that
one. Yeah. I think 2017 was the last update on the Kickstarter page, but I'm under good authority that the guy is still very active on Facebook.
Just not about his game.
Not about his game whatsoever.
Cool. Okay. So yeah, there you go. Thank you for putting up with us, talking through those. So yeah, there's five games potentially. There's a couple more. There's a little game called Amoeba, which is a visual novel. There's Reappear Recycle, which is another puzzle game. I believe Josh Prod are going to have another selection of games coming out as well this year, potentially. Yeah. One of which will be the often muted Okinawa Rush.
Oh, fantastic.
That looks great.
Yeah, it does. We'll have to wait and see what other games they tempt us with. But as soon as we know, you can rest assured that we'll be putting something up on the Dreamcast Junkyard and letting you all know about it. Okay, that's enough from me, I think. I'm going to stop talking now because I'm bored of my own voice, to be honest. I'm going to hand over to Lewis because we've got some questions from our social media followers. I'm going to let you take the lead on this one, Lewis. So the floor is yours.
Okay, so we put out an AMA, which is what the youngsters are saying now, instead of a Q&A, which is Ask Me Anything. But before that, because it's always good to do something as a shit sandwich, but today we're going to go in straight in the middle and talk about some angry people who tweeted at us over, I think it was yesterday, because I don't know what the origins of this, something about people, Sony fanboys freaking out about cross-platform Sony games.
Sony obviously announced some of their titles were being released on PC, and there's a section of Sony fandom which has gone, what's the polite word, crazy, batshit crazy, because they've decided to have loads of their profile pics as upside down PlayStation symbols because of some ridiculous notion that Sony is selling them out. I mean, it's utter nonsense. It's just so pathetic. It's unbelievable. I mean, this whole console conflict was crap at the time. It's even worse now.
I didn't even think that kind of thing actually existed anymore, to be honest.
Yeah, apparently so. Apparently so. There's a section of basement dwelling losers who actually still do think like that. And so I just thought, let's go back to the old days and have a bit of a dig at Sony. we all love PS2, and so how can we not like Sony consoles? You know, I mean, PSP is one of the greatest consoles ever made.
Yeah, so we got the classic, I suppose you call it a meme, of the Dreamcast stand, obviously being the PS2. You've probably all seen it at this point if you've been in this community for at least 5 seconds. And some people got quite frustrated about that. They were saying that the Dreamcast was shit because it didn't have Final Fantasy VII, etc. I just wanted to read out our favourite comment, which is... Hope you enjoy your piss-coloured failure that nearly tanked a company.
He's got a point, to be honest.
but what colour is that guy's piss? I mean, my Dreamcast is white. If their Dreamcast are piss-coloured, they haven't followed Tom's guide on the Dreamcast Junkyard about how to de-yellow the consoles. So that's their own fault, ultimately.
It's a good guide, that, actually. My friend used it to do the same on a GameCube. He had the white GameCube, and he used your guide, Tom. There you go. So you're crossing over into other communities, not just PS2 community, where they get angry at what we say. For the record, I have a lot of PS2 games. It's a good system, you know? Come on, guys. It's just a joke.
We haven't actually had that many negative responses. We had a couple of people who thought they were going to be funny, but actually it's just, you know, everyone knows a Dreamcast stand from, what's the site from? DC Revolution, was it? Or
UK Resistance.
UK Resistance, sorry. That's what
UK
meant.
Resistance, yeah.
Yeah, back in the day.
I mean, I was on an Xbox Series X podcast earlier this week with James defending the PlayStation 4 Pro, so, you know what I mean? It goes across all boundaries, doesn't it, you know?
I mean, back in the last consoles were actually different, unless you're not counting the Wii. Sort of the console games have been pretty much the same, just on a sort of mini PC and sort of box for 20 years now. It's an odd thing to still be back in Mega Drive and SNES days. Maybe you could sort of have an opinion, but I mean, now it's just a bit crazy.
I'm glad it's, I mean, obviously, this is a thing that has happened, but I'm glad that we're seeing the back of that kind of fanboy era. I remember when it was Xbox 360 versus Wii and PS3, and like I would go onto YouTube and see like the top videos on YouTube were like really badly recorded raps of like why the Xbox 360 is better. And I just remember, even though I was, you know, less wiser than I am now, I was thinking, this is awful. Can we stop this? And I'm glad. Yeah.
there'll always be fanboys because, you know, one day you'll realise that most of humanity is just arseholes. I mean, that's about it. It's not, you know, it's what it is.
Anyway, yeah. Let's get on to the positives.
Anyway, back on topic.
Yeah, let's get to the positives.
I went all goff there, sorry.
Kind of relating to what we were just talking about with the PS PlayStation fanboys and the piss-coloured Dreamcasts. but the indie games, the homebrews, Andrew Dickinson, as we've already mentioned him, writer of Dreamcast Year One, he has just said, what we're looking forward to this year out of all the Dreamcast-related games and projects being released.
Is this trying to get us to talk about his book again?
Yeah, I think he is. Just realised that.
Do it again, Andrew.
Oh, damn you, Andrew. We shouldn't have included this question now. He's punked us.
But yeah, I think that is one of the things I'm looking forward to personally. Pretty much everything we've spoken about, really. All the games, the books, the controllers. Long may the new things being produced continue, really. I don't want to put my eggs in one basket on one particular thing, but I think there's a great array of things coming out this year. So there's my non-committal answer for you.
I agree, Tom. If I had to pick one, I would just go with Arcade Racing Legends. It's my favourite genre. I love 90s and early 2000s style racers, arcade racers. So, that's the one for me I'm most looking forward to, I think.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be boring and say the same as James. You know, Arcade Racing Legends is the game I've dreamed about on Dreamcast for ages. So, looking forward to it.
Ooh, what about if Midsommar made an appearance?
Can we talk about that game?
Well, we can talk about the name, can't we?
I mean, we can, yeah. So
the name's out there, which is the new game, yeah. Potentially from Duranic,
who created Stillwind. Yeah, I mean, the game is, I know not much has been made public, but that's going to be the next big Dreamcast indie game.
And we'll say no more.
As for myself, same as you guys, I don't want to put all my eggs in one basket, but if I had to put an egg in one basket, Xenosider, I really like Space Harrier, so that looks really interesting to me. I really like him, what I've seen so far after reading Tom's article. And also Andrew's book, definitely looking forward to that. And I think that's on its way soon, I believe, getting them to us soon. So yeah, looking forward to that. Okay, so moving on, we've got Gary Meacher, who asks, as a Dreamcast fan, do you find yourself compelled to buy Dreamcast games? He said Dreamcast games in quotes, on other devices like the Switch. For example, Ikaruga or Gumbird are on the Switch eShop. Do you see them and think of them as Dreamcast games or feel a tiny pull to get them, even if you already have them on the Dreamcast?
Yeah, I think I probably do. I haven't got those two games, actually. I didn't realize Gumbird was on Switch, but I've got Zero Gunner 2 and Stormwind on Switch. I think you just, because you're used to the games and they're great games, you like them, why wouldn't you buy them again? I don't really care what platform they're on. But in terms of it being a Dreamcast game, yeah, I'm insane. You know, I've got Game Boy Color versions of Dreamcast games, so we're not the best person to talk about.
Yeah, I'd agree with Mike. I actually do feel very much drawn to them, not least because whenever I do see a new game come to the Switch that is also a Dreamcast game, I almost feel compelled to kind of compare it to the Dreamcast version. So there has been a series of articles on the Dreamcast Junkyard on the blog where I've taken the Switch version and compared it to the Dreamcast version. And yeah, I've got all of the games that have come to the Switch that have also been on the Dreamcast. The only one I've not got, I think, is Volgar the Viking, just because I couldn't get past the first level on the Dreamcast version, and I don't think I'm going to pay $7.99 or whatever it is just to do the same on the Switch version. As soon as I see something and go, oh, I've played that, I know that, and I now feel compelled. And I think a lot of people appreciate these articles because some of the comments, people, you know, this isn't really covered anywhere else. I was really surprised to see that none of the big Nintendo websites covered the release of Stormwind on the Dreamcast. I felt like it was almost my duty to kind of show people that this is a Dreamcast game. and this is how it differs from the Dreamcast original. So I feel like, yeah, I'm almost compelled to do it because I'm in a weird way providing like a sort of a public service. That's just what goes on in my head. But yeah.
It's completely game dependent for me. Again, I refer back to the whole nostalgia thing. I was never a shoot 'em up fan, so those games literally mean nothing to me. But I mean, if they put Crazy Taxi on the Switch, for example, I would buy it in a heartbeat, even though I already own it on Dreamcast, on PS2, on Xbox 360, on pretty much anything they ever brought it out on. Mm. So I think, yeah, any sort of ports of certainly your first party stuff, you know, even stuff that I've played to death a million times, like Sonic Adventure, all that sort of stuff would certainly I'd pick up and buy. Or even if they're kind of, you know, spiritual sequels to games that came out on the Dreamcast, if it was games that I was interested in or owned, then I probably would, but I certainly wouldn't buy something just because it was a Dreamcast game. But won't somebody please make a remaster of Toy Commander, for God's sake?
As for myself, it's kind of a similar answer to James. It depends on the game. I mean, in the regard, something like the Switch is a bit different, I think, because I think maybe why you'd get Gumba 2 on that is perhaps just because of the convenience of having it on a console that you can take around with you. You don't have to play it on your TV anymore. You can take it with you on, I don't know, the train or something, you know. So that's pretty cool that we're seeing a lot of these games on a console like the Switch. But I'm not scrambling to get all these ports just because they're Dreamcast. I mean, if they did Skies of Arcadia in HD, I'd buy that in a heartbeat. Especially seeing as I have the crap PAL version that doesn't work through VGA. So yeah, that's definitely a big reason why I'd buy it if they ported it somewhere. So kind of yes and no on this one, I think.
Can I give a special mention just on this topic to the HD Rumble in Ikaruga on the Switch? Because it's just absolutely brilliant the way they've kind of... It's one of the few games that I've played on the Switch that the HD Rumble actually really makes a difference. So if you've never played Ikaruga and you see it cheap on the Switch eShop and you've got a Switch, obviously, just give it a go because the HD Rumble is brilliant. And that's it.
Does it help with making me better at the game at all? Because I'm pretty shit at Ikaruga.
No.
Oh, no. I was hoping you'd say yes. So the next question is from Sega Saturn Shiro. I suppose you have to say it like the advert. So he says there's a lot of praise towards devices like the GDMU, but some criticism about the device, saying it devalues the games by having so many to choose from. He says he doesn't think that, and that it seems to take away the part of the Dreamcast experience by removing the physicality of discs. What are our thoughts? I wrote a few things down. People collect discs. Some people just want to play the games, you know, and don't care if they burn a game or whatever. So, you know, if you have a GDMU, then go for it, you know. Yeah. And really, it doesn't remove the physicality of discs, because you could just have two Dreamcasts, one with a GDMU. So yeah, I mean, I understand what they're saying with, you know, if you have all these games on offer, I can understand you could just get distracted and just keep clicking through them and never really commit to, you know, completing, you know, a longer experience like an RPG or something. But for my SNES, I bought a SD2 SNES, and it's absolutely liberating having so much you can just put on it, and you can get, you know, homebrew and translations. And, you know, if I see a SNES game, I just go, all right, I'll put that on the cart now. So it's kit like that is really good. And if anything, it gives you a chance to explore games that you've never played before. Tom, what do you think about this question?
Yeah. I remember when I had an N64 EverDrive 64, and I had like literally the entire N64 library on that cartridge. And it did kind of feel like you didn't really, I didn't have the same kind of desire to play them because I had them at my disposal instantly. So it does, I think for me, it does kind of devalue the fact that you've got so much choice. Do you know what I mean? It's hard to put into words, but what I will say now, especially with the Dreamcast stuff, is since I sold all of my collection off a couple of years ago with Mike at Bristol Gaming Market. I still actually have access to the games because I've got them all on the Compact Flash Dreamcast. Mm. And yeah, I mean, it doesn't really, I don't know, it doesn't devalue the fact that I've got them. I can still play them whenever I want.
I'll echo that as well, Tom. I think the, and you kind of mentioned this as well, Lewis, on your opening line, it's kind of like there's two distinct differences here. There's the collector and the person who wants to play the stuff, and it's okay to be both. Funny enough, I was having a conversation with Tom about this just after Christmas, where I kind of said, if you've got any Dreamcast you want to get rid of, because I want another one to mod, because I don't want to open up my launch day Dreamcast. But I would like, seeing as I'm playing Dreamcast a lot more now, as I said, I play online at least once a week. You know, I don't, and most of my online games are burnt discs anyway, because a lot of them are US discs. And I just, you know, it's easier to burn one than just than buy a physical and have to swap discs over with a third party boot disc and stuff. So I really want to get one just for the convenience of being able to, to be able to load everything on there, whether it's a GDMU or a hard drive mod or an SD mod or whatever it is. It's not going to stop me wanting to buy games that I want to have in my collection. I've mentioned this on the show before. I'm a bit weird in that I like to buy brand new sealed Dreamcast games where they're available. I'll still open them, but I just like to know that I'm the first person to open it, because that's part of the experience for me. Because again, I had Dreamcast when it was contemporary. It was it's all that kind of again, the nostalgia and the memories that come rushing back. So just having the games available doesn't stop me, you know, won't stop me going out of my way to buy games that I really want in my collection, but it will potentially make me buy other ones, because there's a good chance I'll try something which I'll download and chuck on a hard drive or on a SD card and play. And if I really like it, there's probably a really good chance I'll just try and buy the actual disc version anyway. But in the meantime, I'm not wearing my disc drive out, so I've got no problems with it.
What about you, Mike?
Yeah, same me. I think it's, you know, I am a collector of Dreamcast stuff. But I also believe fully that every single game should be available for a pound. I don't think there's any need to sort of put these self-imposed restrictions on games. I know people still moan about, oh, you can't download a game, it's pirating and stuff. I mean, Sega's not making money out of these games. Other companies aren't making money out of these games. I think the liberating gamers to allow them to actually play what they want to play, as long as it isn't affecting, you know, current developers, then there's no issue with it. And I think I understand where the opinion comes from about devaluing it. I think everyone sort of thought that about music. I know my musical habits, for instance, changed in terms of, used to go to a shop and buy the CD and then obviously listen to the CD and sort of consume it. Now it's more stick on Spotify, go onto a playlist and listen to it at some point. I think for a while people didn't really get that, but if you look at now, look at vinyl sales, they're starting to go up again now. People are starting to appreciate music a lot more. And that is actually hand in hand with streaming. I think rather than being against it, it's actually helping that. So it's actually making people appreciate stuff they wouldn't be able to get access to. You know, it wasn't long ago that all of us, back in the 90s or even earlier, you would never be able to experience. You know, we all wanted to play in the Neo Geo, probably from gaming magazines back in the day. None of us had the ability to do that at the time. And I think that idea and that era where things are sort of held away in mystical little rich people's places and other people can't see it, and other people have sort of access to this sort of mystical knowledge, is not the way it works anymore. The freedom to experience everything is there, and I think, yeah, it can make people appreciate games a lot more. There's games people will find them. I had an Everdrive from a SNES and for the Mega Drive and for a TurboGrafx-16 as well, and I played games I would never play. I mean, why shouldn't we appreciate that? People should be able to play what they want to play.
Mike, didn't music come on wax cylinders when you were a kid?
Yeah, I'm not much older than you, but yeah, well, that was back in LC. We had to sort of, you know, bang the walls of the cave and sort of as we were drawing pictures on the side of it. But
yeah. Okay, so our good pal PC Wizard 13, he says, what's the best Dreamcast game based on a movie, and what Dreamcast game do you think would make a good movie? Right, James.
I've got an answer for this.
Oh, Tom, you go first.
Oh, sorry to jump in. Right. So I was a bit confused what he meant. Does it have to be an actual film license, or is it a game that's just kind of sort of based on something that's loosely film based?
Could you not have let the rest of us go first, Tom, and figure this out as we answer that?
Because I've written some things down. The only direct film license I could think of was Taxi 2.
Shit,
and am I wrong?
No,
yeah, you are wrong. I've got one which is based on an actual film license, but I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait now. And make you all look stupid.
Okay, right. I'm going to give you what I've written down. Right, just as a start for 10. So I was under the impression that maybe it could be things that were based on films. So I've gone for Star Wars Racer.
Oh, shut up, Tom. Why did I let you go first? That was mine.
And the film that the game that I would like to see made into a film would be Headhunter.
Yeah, cool.
Mm.
That's nice. Mine.
Yeah.
Well, I had good money on Tom choosing Spirit of Speed as his film, as his game that I should make into a film. But yes, Star Wars Episode One Racer was mine. It's not a great port, but I still enjoyed it nonetheless. My Dreamcast game to be made into a film, I mentioned it earlier on in the show, is Toy Commander, but hear me out on this. Imagine, so Home Alone, which we all know is one of the best films ever made. If you imagine a reboot of Home Alone, and when he's putting the toys down to fend off all of the bad guys, the kind of the second movie spins off then, and it's actually all the toys come into life to protect the house. How good would that be?
Well, so we have to wait all the way into quarters of the way into the film before it goes off into the Toy Commander world.
No, it's like a reboot, but it's like kind of like, you know, they'll show at the beginning like what happened up to that point. I haven't worked it all out yet, Tom. I haven't put the cast in or anything. But instead of like Kevin's like house of traps and stuff, it's just going to be the toys themselves.
That's crap.
What about you, Mike?
so there's a lot more than like four games based on movies. I think people are forgetting that Japan has a large amount of very random games based on random animes which had films. I do feel a bit like Stato sometimes, which is quite cool. I always wanted to be Stato when I was a kid. That's weird. But my choice would be favorite game based on a film would be Toy Story 2.
Oh yeah, of course, all the Disney films.
Yeah, quite a good game actually. It's a pretty decent game. It's not amazing, but it's a decent little game. And best game to be made into a film? Well, Shenmue, isn't it?
No.
What do you know?
Tom, the obvious one you didn't mention is The Grinch as well, mate, which is like, I believe made after you, and you could star in that.
Yeah.
I don't know where this came from. For those people listening, James was texting me over Christmas, and for some reason, apparently, I was grumpy, and now I'm a Grinch, apparently. So, yeah.
Massive Grinch.
I think that the best movie licensed Dreamcast game is definitely 102 Dalmatians. No, I do not have an opinion on this. I couldn't think of a good Dreamcast movie game, but I do think that they should make a film about Seaman, and it'd be like Gremlins, and it'd be like there'd be a main character who'd like befriend Seaman. And
I would advise you not to search on the internet though for a film.
As a quick aside about films about Seaman. No, don't. I'm not going to go there. Has anyone seen
Shenmue? Surely.
Has anyone seen the Angry Video Game Nerd on Seaman?
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah.
It's so good. It's just such a good one of his best ones, I think.
I listened to there's a podcast that I've been listening to for a couple of months now called How Did This Get Played, and it's about like bad and weird video games. And they did an episode about Seaman. It's just brilliant. It's well worth a listen. Check that out if you're not aware of it.
So, Mike, how many films would Shenmue be in? Are we talking 7 or 8 or any more?
Well, They'd have to film the first couple and then wait about 20 years for the third. Yeah. And then not be very good in the end anyway, so everyone complains about it. But,
the first film is him deciding what he wants from the Fender machine for about 20 minutes. And then...
I mean, it'd have to be a Hong Kong action film, because otherwise it would be so cheesy, it would be the worst film ever made. Apart from Taxi 2, which is have you ever seen Taxi? This is going to come as no surprise to anybody. I do have a collection of movies based on Dreamcast games. I picked up Taxi 2 in CX for 50p. It's really bad. You can see the plot line from it, because the game, to be fair to the game does actually follow the plot line. It's a shit plot line. That's a problem.
Crazy. Who would play Rio in a film? Of Shenmue.
Well,
I'd cast Mackenzie Crook, personally.
We've lost time, I think. It's time to move on to the next question.
The next question is from Brian from the Saturn Junkyard. What is it about the Dreamcast that continues to make us passionate enough to play, discuss, collect, record a podcast about a console that lived and died two decades ago? Yeah. I wish, but what does Sega's oddly shaped hunk of metal and plastic mean to you today? Tom, you go first, seeing as you are the junkyard man.
The junkyard man. That's the first.
It's like Stinger.
What does it mean to me? Stinger the dump, yeah.
I've set Tom off again, haven't I?
What does it mean to me? I don't know. I kind of have a bit of a love-hate relationship with the Dreamcast, because obviously it affords us all the reason to be here doing this, and the various friendships that have been created through this kind of weird connection with this console. That's a damn good question. I don't know. Madness, possibly. Obsession. I don't know. I, ask somebody else. I, that's my response. I can't answer that question. I have no idea.
What about you, James?
I think, again, I've alluded to this quite a bit in some of the questions we've discussed up to this point. I'm extremely nostalgic for Dreamcast. It was a point in my life where, as I said, I was kind of making informed decisions about gaming for the first time, rather than just kind of, being gifted games and being gifted consoles. And, you know, yes, I wanted a PlayStation 1 when they came out, and I got one in 96. And, I still didn't really know what new games were coming out and when, whereas the Dreamcast was the one that was when I was kind of most invested in the industry for the first time, you know, off the back of the PlayStation and the N64. And, you know, there were just so many firsts for me from the Dreamcast's point of view. No less than online gaming, and a big reason for why I still play my Dreamcast online today is, again, for those memories that when I was 16 playing on the Dreamcast online via a 33k modem dial-up cable that spanned the entire length of my landing, which my mum would complain about every time she went up to bed, because of course I couldn't use the phone line until the evening when the calls were free anyway. And that was just, and you know, I look back at it now, and that really did change the way that I looked at games moving forward, because, you know, I'm a huge online gamer nowadays. I do a lot of, obviously with Destiny 2, but I play a lot of games online, always have since the Dreamcast. And yeah, it was just a great, a great time in my life from a gaming perspective. So I think it still means a hell of a lot to me, just because, you know, it was just such a great time to be playing games.
What about you, Mike?
Come on, stick of the dump, Mike, too.
I think for me, it's similar to James to an extent. It was the first console I bought with my own money, my first job. I was a PC gamer at the time, but the Dreamcast was my sort of side console. And I think just for me, a series of coincidences have happened throughout my life that every single time I set out to do something, Dreamcast seems to come into it. So when I was living away from home, I had Dreamcast was my only sort of my only thing I had back of my own stuff at that time. When I met my now wife, she had a Dreamcast. She decided to get a Dreamcast rather than the GameCube, and she was a younger. When I first started out collecting, went to a charity shop day after and found two of the games which are more expensive on Dreamcast for 50 pence each. just a series of sort of things which sort of, to me, just feels to like Dreamcast is what I should be interested in. And the console itself, to me, it's a perfect... It's the perfect turning point of gaming. I like old game. I like retro games. I like old style arcade games. But I've always been more of a long form gamer, and I think Dreamcast was the first console which sort of did the both. I've always been a big online gamer as well. Been playing online since 1999, and so all those kind of elements for me are in one little tiny box of dreams that Sega made. And I think also the fact it's a failure. I think we do love failures in this country sometimes. And I think there's something quite rebellious about the Dreamcast, where it's not a mainstream console. It never has been. It's never been that sort of popular. It's been always something on the periphery of mainstream, and to me that's always appealed.
Mike, do you feel the same as me as well? As you know, you mentioned it was the first console you bought with your own money, which was the same for me. And okay, you know, growing up, you're not afforded the luxury of having whatever game you want whenever it comes out, so you're kind of like you're relying on birthdays and you're relying on Christmases and stuff. And I think going back to the question, which is around what does it mean to you today, I think it's still fantastic that I can still buy games, you know, secondhand games that from the time that I wanted to play back in 1999, 2000, 2001, but couldn't afford or had moved on or whatever it was, you know, like South Park Rally. It's a pretty shitty game, but it's a game I wanted to play back then, was never able to. And it's just great to be able to relive that now, I think, and just sort of, you know, have a list of all these games that I wanted to play that I spent hours reading in Dreamcast magazine and thinking that looks amazing, and actually being able to kind of live that out now, which is, I think, part of why I still like to buy sealed games and still open them now.
I think that's exactly why. I think for me, you know, growing up, I was never from a place of lots of money. I was never in a place where I had lots of things. I've worked my entire life, and my first thing was Dreamcast. Now I've got a bit more freedom in my life and a bit more sort of ability to spend what I want to spend it on. For me, the reason I collect Dreamcast and the reason I write about Dreamcast and the reason I talk about Dreamcast to random people on the street is because to me it's everything's nostalgia anyway. We're all harking back to a time in our life where we were comfortable with, but for me it's just... It's a real simple console to get into in terms of, you know, you can get probably the top 10 games on Dreamcast cost you no more than £10 each. You can really delve quite deep into Dreamcast and you can experience things on there. And it's the reason I keep coming back to Dreamcast and the reason I keep with the Dreamcast is that every time you think you've discovered everything about the console, something else comes up. You know, I thought having a full game collection would be the end of it. You know, I've games are coming out. We've got the online side of things. Everything is so... I don't know, maybe it's the way that they made the console, the fact that they had that, some of the flaws they had with the console, like being able to read mill CDs, has allowed us to prolong the life of it. And I think there's just so much more from the console. Everyone's reason for wanting to still play Dreamcast is different. I mean, mine comes from a very personal perspective. Every moment of my life has had the Dreamcast in it, but certainly it's a great console to collect for. I think of all the consoles out there, it's one of the few which you can realistically get a really large collection going for quite a small amount of money. All the games are pretty good. We laugh and we joke about Spirit of Speed 1937. I'd happily play Spirit of Speed 1937. I actually do get some enjoyment out of playing the game. I get enjoyment out of playing Roadsters. Not much, but I do get a little bit of it. It's one of the few consoles where everything is just interesting, and there's always something to discover.
I'm pretty much same here. I was a kid when it came out, and I didn't really get into the Dreamcast until 10 years probably after. So for me, other than the few games I played around my friend's house when I was a kid, everything was completely new to me, because I guess because of the Dreamcast dying when it did, you know, it seemed like it almost got lost for a time, you know, and if you weren't on the internet, you know, sort of during the noughties, then you were missing out on all this stuff. So, you know, I try to remember all these games that I played as a kid, and then there was just all these different ones that I'd never heard of. I'd never heard of, you know, Shenmue, surprisingly. I'd never heard of Rez or, you know, Cosmic Smash or something like this. And yeah, I still find that I'm, you know, especially being on the podcast and, you know, being in the community, I'm finding out so all about all these different games all the time. You know, like last year I got Grandia 2. I'd never played that before, and now I have, and it was awesome. So yeah, I can't think of a console where no matter what you know, game I get, like, I'm pretty much get a bit of enjoyment out of it, and they still hold up pretty well, quite a lot of them as well. And if anything, that guy called it a piss colored failure, but the fact it was a failure made it probably better than quite a lot of consoles, because Sega were really trying to push the envelope to get people to buy their system. And that's why we got things like Shenmue and Sega Gaga and stuff like that.
I think to semi quote of a poor Canadian pop punk band, it's all killer, no filler for the Dreamcast.
Nice, nice.
You know, it's sort of there's so many classics on Dreamcast. You know, we didn't have many RPGs, but we had probably the best, or some of the best. You know, we didn't have as many racing games as the PS1, but you know what, the racing games we had are great. I think it's almost like we didn't have much, but what we had was top quality. And that's what Sega always delivered, wasn't it? Sega was always known as that sort of high quality arcade experience.
Okay, well, thank you very much, everybody, for your questions. I think we've pretty much covered them all comprehensively there. So I hope you've stuck with us all the way through to the end. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Lewis. And thank you, James, for coming together to talk about the Dreamcast. Episode 70, Dreamcast Junkie at DreamPod. Yeah, is there anything else anyone wants to say or discuss before we draw this one to a close? Yep. Silence? No, that's good. Okay.
Tom, what does the Dreamcast really mean to you, Tom?
Well, let's get into this now. Let's get into this. Draw up a seat, draw up a chair, and I'll discuss it. thank you for listening to you, the listener, obviously. Thank you to my co-hosts. You can find us on social media at the DC Junkyard on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. We've also got a group. We've got our YouTube channel. If you like what you've heard today, please consider giving us a review on iTunes, because obviously it helps for other people to find the podcast and listen. If you're a fan of the Dreamcast in general, please consider having a look at our website. It's the dreamcastjunkyard.co.uk. Basically, if you just type the Dreamcast Junkyard into Google, you'll find it. There's 15 years worth of content on there, articles, reviews, previews, news, all kind of stuff, interviews. We're going to go off now and play our piss-coloured consoles that nearly tanked a company. So until next time, this has been the Dreamcast Junkyard Dream Pod. Goodbye.
Please stop this disc now.
Because, of course, the other story is there's only one Dreamcast game ever developed in Wales, which, of course, was Spirit of Speed 1937.
I think that
doesn't say much about the game, but there you go.
Mate, we've had this conversation. It's genuinely not a bad game. It's just people aren't good
at it. Oh, what? It's rubbish!
It's not. You're just shit at it, Tom. You just need to
It's terrible. It's like 3 frames a second. No, I'm not being gaslit by you. No way. Not having it.